Hey, this is Daryl Etherington, and I'm here with
Anthony Ha.
And we are bringing you original content, TechCrunch's podcast focused on all things streaming media and even broader media most of the time now. So
yeah, we're as with a lot of things, there's a little bit of mission creep here. We are going to be reviewing the Inhumans, is it called The Inhumans or just Marvel's Inhumans?
I think it's just called Inhumans.
That first of all is a terrible mistake. So we're going to be reviewing Inhumans, which is not actually a streaming original, but we've been talking about it for the last few episodes.
We figured let's actually watch
the thing.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, let people know what we think. But of course, we will start out by kind of recapping the past week of streaming news.
Yes, as we always do. And this week was pretty exciting. I think there's a lot going on. What happened? What are we going to lead off with here, Anthony?
So I think the big news, I mean, there's just sort of this continuing fallout around the allegations about Harvey Weinstein and his, alleged assault and harassment. And what's kind of been interesting, one of the things that's come out of this, I think, is this broader conversation about harassment in the industry, and these accusations resurfaced about Roy Price, the head of Amazon Studios, and that he had allegedly, basically, really inappropriately propositioned Isa Hackett, one of the producers of On the Man in the High Castle, and also the daughter, Philip K. Dick, whose work it's based on. And just would not back down. And she described it as a shocking and surreal experience. And now Roy Price, he was originally put on suspended, and now he's gone.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, it's interesting that you mentioned it, but it's like, it was revealed previously. Like, it wasn't a thing that was brand new information, but
yeah,
it was like, I guess, I mean, part of this whole thing is that even stuff that was existing or that was known is being brought up again. And then in light of like the new context and new climate, it's like different rules apply, but different consequences, I guess, apply.
Yeah. It is strange because, as I understand, basically, there was an internal investigation into this back when it, you know, shortly after it happened in a couple of years ago in 2015. And Price was still in his role. And then in August, there was a story about it, but I think Hackett wasn't speaking publicly about it. And then more recently, she actually came forward and said this happened. And so when you sort of, it has sort of gradually built, but there is an element of, if this was true, why wasn't this? It's not like Amazon didn't know about this in 2015.
Right, right. And they did on their side, I mean, they did the suspension. And then, I mean, the way they're spinning it is that he resigned, but probably not an actual resignation, right? I think they're doing it that
right.
way.
Right. So yes, you're right, right. You're correct. He technically officially resigned.
Right. But then, and I mean, also, like, not a professional matter, but his engagement was called off too.
Right.
As a result of this. But yeah, I think that there's more than a bit of on the Amazon side, just like triage and like distancing. And I mean, they, as callous as it sounds, they have to be taking into account public perception concerns. And that's probably what is the differentiating factor here between how they treated it the first time around and how they treated it now that it's been resurfaced.
Right. Which is, I mean, you know, on the one hand, you'd like to think, well, if it was the right thing to do before, they should have done it. But it's also nice to know that, like, look, these things do make a difference. Because I think sometimes it can feel like no matter what kind of horrible things are revealed, you know, there are no consequences for certain people. Yes, that was a veiled reference to U.S. politics. In this case, that wasn't true. I mean, it is also, you do wonder a little bit, and again, it feels kind of gross to talk about in this context, but I do think that when they make these decisions, there is this sort of like complex calculus also of like, well, how important is this person to, you know, to the company. And so this is also coming at the time that sometimes that I feel like when you, sometimes you look from the outside and somebody, you know, the stuff builds and builds and builds and it doesn't seem to do any damage. And then suddenly it does. And,
yeah,
you know, the part of the question is, why does that happen then? And I think a lot of it has to do with public perception. And I think part of it also has to do with sort of how secure somebody might be internally. And I mean, we've talked in the past about, you know, Amazon Studios, I think at this point is like figuring out a new direction. And so that may have also made him more vulnerable. I mean, again, I don't know. I mean, this is just, you know, talking, like, again, just trying to figure out, you know, why this is happening now.
Yeah, but I think that's right too. I think that there is an element of like, if things were going swimmingly, like this might have gone a different direction, but there was a combination of factors. But also,
he might have been suspended and they tried to find a way for him to come back or something. Versus I think on some level they may not have. And I guess maybe in another context, I mean, that what also came out this past weekend was the fact that Amazon has canceled one of the shows that it was doing with the Weinstein Company, and that the second show, it's basically cutting the Weinstein Company out of the deal and it's just producing it on its own. And in those cases, I think the show that got canceled, I think, was already like kind of having like a fairly turbulent production.
Mm-hmm.
And so you wonder to what extent there's also an element of saying, hey, this also like gives us cover to kind of pull out of some stuff that we didn't necessarily want to do in the first, that we were kind of regretting already.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, motivations aside too, like it is good. Like it's a net good that, that they are, you know, responding in a way that results in these people being gone, or, you know, like,
yes. Yeah. And I want to be 100% clear. Yeah. I think that, you know, that what he did, if it's true, and then I don't think there's any reason to believe it wasn't, that the allegations aren't true, is absolutely something he should have been fired for.
Yeah.
And I think that the way that a lot of these different institutions in Hollywood are responding to both the Weinstein situation, the Price situation, and this broader conversation around the treatment of women in Hollywood, I think is really important. And so, you know, even if I don't think any of these decisions always come from a pure, just purely altruistic standpoint,
no,
I still think it's good that they're happening.
Yeah. 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 And there could be other elements at play in terms of like why this didn't happen before and why it happened now, including like maybe more information came to light or whatever. But like, I mean, it seems very much like it's a direct fallout resulting from the Harvey Weinstein issue and the lens that has put on, the magnifying glass that has put on kind of the industry and its treatment of allegations and sexual harassment in general.
Right, exactly.
All right, well, have they haven't announced a replacement for him yet, have they?
No, they have not.
Okay, so that'll be interesting to watch for, especially given, like we were talking about, their other sort of motivations and you know, the goals with a studio, I guess, that they want to kind of shift focus and stuff like that. So I wonder who they'll bring in, whether it'll be internal or whether it'll be somebody kind of like a big, you know, sort of high profile person, perhaps affiliated with some of these other projects that they emulate or aspire to.
Right. Yeah. No, it seems like the normal strategy here is you bring in sort of a Hollywood person who can actually, because I think there's kind of a sense that maybe that, you know, if you just promote some Amazon executive that the Hollywood types won't necessarily want to work with him.
Yeah, exactly.
Or her.
Yeah, right. Cool. Well, do you want to move on to the next thing?
Yeah, let's do it. So there's also some news about Netflix. Basically, they had their earnings this week, and they added 5.3 million new subscribers. And
is that global total or domestic?
That's a global total, yeah. Okay. So 850,000 came from the U.S. and 4.45 million came from everywhere that's not the U.S.
Okay, interesting. I mean, their growth internationally has been their big source of growth over the past multiple earnings, I think. So that's kind of on trend, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think the thing is that, I mean, this is actually, that's even, that's, that is, a, that they beat the expectation. So I mean, I think, well, the main thing, if you're a Wall Street investor, is you always just want to see companies beat their own estimates.
Yeah, their predictions, right?
Right, exactly. But I think the other issue is just, seeing, like, Netflix is one of those companies that has, you know, such dominance already that the question is always, how much more can you grow? And it seems like, all right, because they seem still
like,
going.
And like that's the thing, right? Because you look at them, and especially in a North American context, like you just feel like everyone, anecdotally, everyone you know is a Netflix subscriber.
And right. Or at least if they're not a Netflix subscriber, they're friends with someone who
they borrow someone's login.
Yeah, exactly. They have access to Netflix.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it's like, it's, it consistently surprises me, like, that they're able to do that. I mean, the international growth, I think they attribute a lot to their efforts to create actual, like, original programming in a lot of those markets.
Right. I mean, I think some of it is, you know, designed specifically for those countries, and then some of it is also like trying to create something that like Narcos or Sense8. I mean, not to say those are complete successes, but that have this sort of international appeal in the same way that, like, you know, now, like, Hollywood tries to make movies that, you know, have scenes that take place in China so that they'll do well in China. It's right. Not just making a show for China, but also something that might appeal both to US audiences and international audiences.
Yeah. And I mean, and Netflix has had some crossover hits back the other way too, where even that when they are localizing content for a specific region, it does well elsewhere. I'm thinking of Terrace House. I love Terrace House.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, it's interesting because this is, you know, I guess a smaller part of that strategy, but one of the things is because a lot of these shows have these sort of complicated rights and release deals is that you start to see, like, some shows that aren't even on Netflix in the US may show up as Netflix originals in other countries. And so exactly what is a Netflix original and what counts as original content for Netflix, I think is also a little bit of a blurry line, because it may, you know, essentially pay for exclusive rights in certain countries, isn't necessarily the main company behind the show, but is, you know,
but it's funding a considerable amount of its production as a result, right?
Yeah, and so, and then because of that, it becomes a Netflix original, and so
The 100 and the Riverdale both count as that, like, done in partnership with CW, but
right.
They get branded as originals in other countries, like here, Canada.
That's right. And speaking of the original content, so the other thing that came out of the earnings report was the fact that they're planning to spend $7 to $8 billion on original content next year.
Wow. Okay. So that's in line with what they had sort of talked about earlier. They had talked about the previous
$7 billion. Yeah, I think
$7 billion was the figure bandied about. So it's gone up even since then. I mean, it's getting very competitive out there, right? Like, Hulu is spending up a lot, and I've seen a lot of chatter about how they're maybe stealing some of the high profile projects that Netflix might have acquired otherwise. I think they're doing, it's not really a scattershot approach the way that Netflix is doing, like, but it seems like maybe they're cherry picking some of the better projects or the more promising projects.
Right. I think that I know a lot of the platforms that we're talking about, like Amazon and Apple, I think, you know, they put out these numbers like $1 billion, you know, usually in the sort of $1 or $2 billion range in terms of their spending goals. And so this is, I mean, considerably ahead of what everyone else is doing as far as streaming goes.
Yeah, it is. It is. And but that's the thing, right? Like if like HBO and some of these other ones can come in and do a more concentrated and considered spend, like, does that then upset the boat? And then, I mean, and also the other question is always, how long can Netflix keep this going in terms of doing this without providing adequate sort of, and they do fine on the revenue front, but like at some point there's going to be an imbalance that's too great to sustain, right? Unless the growth continues, and the growth seems to be continuing.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's working for now, but you do wonder if, like, you know, every year the spending goes up, and is it, you know, ever going to reach a point where it sort of plateaus, because you just, there's only so much money in the world.
Yeah, and the impact of flops is going to start affecting them too, right? Especially, I don't think we talked about this specifically in terms of our, like, planning, but there was the Netflix and what's the TV show ratings company? Nielsen. So Nielsen is going to start revealing some numbers.
Yeah.
Which I think that Netflix officially disputes their methodology, which involves like
right.
listening for ambient audio using the Nielsen boxes or something. It's actually creepy as hell. And it doesn't take into account any mobile viewing, which is like, okay, you
wait, that's at best insane.
You're batting 500 and probably not, right? Like so much of Netflix consumption is done on mobile.
Yeah. I mean, and I mean, even, I don't know exactly what the numbers are, but I mean, it just seems like fundamentally, like directionally, like obviously more and more viewing is going to happen on mobile.
Yes. Yeah. So it you know, there's tons of problems with it, but it will start presenting some numbers and then we'll get some idea about how this stuff performs. And then that combined with their own cancellations are the best sign we have yet about how things are doing, right? They just canceled. They just announced they canceled the
right.
Chelsea Handler's talk show, which
that's right.
I'm surprised it lasted as long as it did, actually, given the response, because the response was universally that this is a bad show and should not be on television.
Have you watched any of it?
No. I think I started watching like one and was like, okay, I understand. I don't need to watch any more of this. So
yeah.
And I like some of her other stuff. And I watched her documentary series on Netflix, a few episodes of it. And a few episodes of it I very much enjoyed. And then gradually I was like, oh, I really do not like this, because it's just her having dinner with people and then like talking about shit that is not at all relatable, like with Hollywood elites. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me in a way that they're trying to convey, like, oh, it's relatable. And it's like, no, it's not. Look at your ridiculous opulent dinner. Like, what are you talking about?
I mean, that also gets into like the whole like, you know, talk show thing where like, you know, like the stars are coming out and they're trying to like, you know, tell these funny stories about their daily lives as if, you know, to make them more relatable. But like the subtext is always like, oh, right. Like also it's because you are like fabulously wealthy and are going all these places that I will never go to.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it I think it suffered from that. I think it, I don't know. It had a bunch of problems, but it's gone. Although yeah. they said they were supposed to be working on other projects with her, but
right.
that and like the Sense8, and Sense8 is a show that I actually quite enjoyed. Although I didn't watch the second season because I didn't feel that interested for whatever reason. So like that cancellation was another big sign, like, okay, this was very spendy and it did not work out in terms of return.
Right.
Maybe creatively it worked out, but in terms of return, it didn't work out. I don't want to get the Sense8 fans. I think they're kind of rabid. You're a big fan.
I mean, I love Sense8. Yeah. And I agree. And, you know, I think it's one of those things where, yeah, I mean, so part of the argument, I think, from Netflix's point of view is Netflix don't need to share any outside numbers because we're not,
what does it matter,
advertising driven.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's no reason for us to share. We'll make our own internal decisions about what makes sense to renew and cancel, but no one else needs to be involved in this decision. I think that there's a sense, maybe a little bit creatively, that can be, I think, you know, people who make Netflix TV and movies, there've definitely been like some reports that like they kind of never hear anything from Netflix.
Right.
They're like, hey, what's going on?
And that's concerning as a person who produces something for the purpose of having people presumably
right.
watch it or enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that, so, I mean, that said, I mean, I think like if Netflix lets you make your show and spends a lot of money on it, like you may ultimately just have to suck it up and
yeah.
play by their rules. But I think, yeah, that there is this sort of, and this is happening in the context of also Nielsen in general, just over the past year has really been moving into measuring as much stuff on streaming video as possible, which, you know, seems like, yeah, obviously that's what you should do.
Yeah.
I think it's just been figuring out the right methodology so that it's getting as close to, you know, an apples to apples comparison as possible.
Yeah. But I mean, all of this, it got really windy, but all of this was that the point I wanted to make was like, you know, people trust investors, Wall Street trusting Netflix to spend a bunch of money on content because they have a history of producing quality content that attracts subscribers. I mean, the whole thing is kind of a tenuous house of cards in that if you start having a lot of cancellations off that spend, you know, it could be bad. It could be good though too. I mean, it could not matter as long as the subscriber numbers keep going up. But if there's like, if you start seeing a trend in it where they're doing a lot of cancellations, they're spending a lot of money, and their hit rate is not great, and subscriber numbers are tailing off, I mean, then you're in trouble, I think.
Yeah, exactly. I think like it seems like it's fine. It seems to be working out well for now. And I think, you know, Reid Hoffman has said that, like, you know, part of this, that if anything, they should be maybe canceling more shows, you know, not because the shows are bad, but just because that's part of the strategy, is you should be like taking big swings. But then if it's not working out, you know, that you don't necessarily need to give it 5 seasons.
Yeah. I was trying to continue your baseball analogy there. Like send well, you also like
yeah,
minor?
Dropped in that like what do you call it? You dropped in the Netflix reference by referring to it as a house of cards.
Oh, I did.
Very nice.
Yeah, that's right. I did that on purpose. I'm very clever.
Super clever. Super
okay,
clever.
Okay, moving on. I just want to take the credit for that and then get out. Let's go.
All right. So as far as Netflix original content goes, I think we also wanted to talk about The Punisher.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So, I mean, The Punisher, it's a series that I am still very much looking forward to. But it's definitely, there was actually an article, and we should link this. I think it was Gizmodo who wrote about how, like, hey, this is problematic content now and, like, probably just a bad idea in general. I think they wrote this yesterday or the day before. And in it, they kind of included, like, hey, they've gotten really quiet about the release date here for The Punisher, and they pulled it from the New York Comic Con because of sensitivity around the Las Vegas shooting, since it was immediately, like, the event and the activation they were planning would have been like immediately following that shooting, which happened on October 1st. So, you know, Netflix was like, and I think this was the right decision, like, hey, we probably don't want to promote this thing that glorifies gun violence, like just luxuriates and murders via bullets or whatever. So let's get this out of here, and then we'll rethink it or whatever. So Gizmodo had suggested, like, maybe they even rethought the release time frame. But then the very next day or 2 days later at most, Netflix dropped the trailer, the newest trailer for it. And also revealed the release date, which will be November 17th. So all episodes available streaming November 17th.
So it's coming real soon.
Real soon, right? So that, and I mean, based on everything I've seen about it and kind of how they've talked about the timeline for its release previously, I would say that's not a changed date. Like maybe right. by a week or two, but like not a significantly delayed release window for that. So I'm also doubting that they made any significant edits to kind of the content of the programming.
Right. They were just kind of like, okay, well, we're not going to promote it quite as aggressively, at least in the immediate aftermath of the shooting. But other than that, it doesn't seem like...
Yeah, everything else, like, plans on track. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, how do you think... I'm very conflicted because, like, I like Marvel's The Punisher. I like him as a character. I am not a gun owner, nor am I an advocate of gun ownership at all among like individual private citizens. I'm very much against it, actually. But like, yeah, and I don't know. I do feel conflicted about it, though. I feel like, okay, this is true. Like, what really gave me pause is the BoJack Horseman episode. Have you watched up to that this season?
No, yeah? I haven't.
Okay, so there's one episode where they're literally talking about, oh, we're promoting this film. And it's like, I think it's called like Taken. It's like a sequel to Taken. It's called Mistaken. It's actually quite, okay. very funny. And then, but there's a mass shooting. So they like delay the premiere, and then there's another mass shooting, and then they delay the premiere, and then there's another mass shooting, and they delay the, like, over and over again. And they say like, on every call or meeting they are discussing it, they say like, such a tragedy, like, warmest sympathies, like, warmest regards or whatever, like, over and over again, like, they just repeat it as a refrain, like, thoughts and prayers, that's what they do. So yeah. I mean, it's really biting and kind of like sad and painful, especially because it was, I mean, they couldn't have known that the Las Vegas shooting was going to happen when they released that, but it feels very much like that, right? Like, that is what kind of Netflix is doing with this The Punisher show. But yeah, so I don't know. I'm very confused at the moment. I'm very confused.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that that was part of what that article about the Punisher was trying to get at is, like, I mean, there's also just something fundamentally about the character who, like, I mean, and this is, like, you know, part of my own, I think, you know, I'm not a fan of the character of the Punisher.
Yeah.
And I think some of that is just, like, a fan preference, which, like, you know, who cares? But, like, I think part of it is also that, I mean, he is, in general, obviously, like, a lot of movies, including, like, the superhero movies now are, like, have a ton of, like, action and violence, but it's generally this very kind of cartoonish violence that doesn't really have any relation to real world violence, and so we can be fairly comfortable watching it as escapist entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, even though the all the Netflix Marvel shows I think are a little bit more down to earth, and so and I think in some ways do deal with, you know, real life issues in interesting ways, I think particularly in terms of like how Jessica Jones deals with the aftermath of rape, and I've heard that Luke Cage is, I mean, a very, like, interesting show from, like, the perspective of race, but at the same time, I think, yeah, the Punisher kind of just, like, takes that question to, like, a whole other level, and I think it seems to me that, like, the only way you could do that show, I think, in a way that would be, like, really defensible is if it was, like, a really serious exploration of those issues, and as opposed to just, hey, like, he shoots a bunch of people and it's really badass. And I think that part of what, like, the Punisher, like some of these other versions of the Punisher, including that, like, short film that I think Thomas Jane made a few years ago, I think was, like, in some ways, like, the most obvious example of this, where it's just, they talk about, like, the Punisher as, like, an adult superhero, but mostly in the sense just because, like, there's a lot of violence, not because it's, like, a particularly serious or thoughtful take on it. And so, I just think, like, it's going to be a tough thing. So, I think, I mean, it's going to be tough to watch the Punisher and not think about, like, the larger world. I mean, I think, you know, I think some people would like to be able to say, well, look, it's just pure entertainment. Why can't you just watch it as pure entertainment? But I don't think you can ever completely separate those things. And so I think part of it is, like, yeah, I just think making a show about the Punisher in 2017 at this point where, you know, America just has this horrible problem with guns is really tough. And I don't, at least, I'm sure some people can just watch it the same way they would watch, like, an 80s action movie with a ton of, or, like, you know, a John Woo movie and just enjoy it just as pure entertainment. But I think for a lot of people, including myself, probably, like, that will be tough.
Yeah, I think that's what I was feeling too. But I think it's interesting too, because the trailer seems almost purposely edited to kind of address those fears. Like, not necessarily, but it seems to emphasize parts of the film that are more like, or not the film, but the series that are more about his human story and to get in his motivation, and the motivation being kind of like that the problem to begin with was maybe the military industrial complex or something like that. Like, yeah, I think they're trying to shift focus away. Previous ones have been very focused on, like, his role as an ultra violent anti-hero. And this was more about, like, here's why he's doing this. And it's a good reason. Which is kind of like, okay, I guess. But the other, I was talking about this kind of conflict with my girlfriend Tara, and she was like, yeah, but I mean, that's not why people go out and kill people. And it, because, like, the argument being sort of that, like, hey, we consume all this media too here. In Canada,
right.
We don't have violent gun deaths or mass shootings. Like, we do, but we just don't have them with anywhere near the frequency of the U.S., right? Like,
right.
Our cultural consumption in terms of media is essentially the same. All U.S. media is, for all intents and purposes, Canadian media in terms of what we watch on TV and in theaters. And we just don't have that problem. So that made me feel a little bit less sort of like, that I can just enjoy it on that level and be like, okay, it'll be fine. But I mean, it must be a contributor in some way, right? Like, It's so hard to pull out the causal aspects of this because it's a web, like it's a complex issue, right? Like,
right. And I think that, I mean, we always want to be able to point at like the one thing and like treat it as like a fixable problem. I mean, that said, just, you know, statistically speaking, I think in some ways it is a fixable problem because it's just like, if you don't have access to guns, you can't kill that many people with guns. Right. Not to get too sidetracked, but I mean, I think that's, you know, part of that, this discussion that we're having, which is then if...
Yeah, because I don't want to get into the stuff, like, I feel like when I'm talking about it, it's a web and it's a combination of factors. Like, I don't want that to come off as like the NRA argument that like, oh, well, this isn't the problem. It's like, no. The gun sales is the problem. It's like,
right.
Stop that and you will go a long way towards solving the rest, which isn't to absolve you from having to like address the issue of like care for mentally ill individuals and like availability of care and cost of affordability of care. Like, those things still also need to be addressed, but the first one is very easy and obvious and fixable.
Right. Well, I guess, yeah, I guess the two things come to mind with that. One is, I think that it's theoretically easy to address, but part of the reason why the U.S. hasn't been able to address it is because this sort of culture that's been built up in this glorification of guns. And I think that,
and this contributes to that in a big way,
isn't about Hollywood specifically, but certainly I think Hollywood plays a role in that. And I would also say that, yeah, my argument would
it's not like Hollywood caused that. Hollywood took that and made it into something. Like it latched
and
on
sold
to
it
that.
Back to us, and then in the process of selling it back to us, I think reinforced it in a lot of ways. And I think what also has, I think, at least, and you know, I'm not saying that this is how every person who's not super excited about the Punisher show feels, but at least my perspective would be less that it's not that Netflix shouldn't have made this show or that it's irresponsible to make this show, but just that I think that a lot of people are going to be carrying a lot of these concerns with them when they decide to watch the show and when they're watching the show. And I just think that's completely valid. Like, I think you're completely allowed, and I will, you know, say like, look, I'm, you know, not really, I may end up saying like, I'm really not enjoying this because I can't like just enjoy watching this guy mow down a bunch of people, like, right, even if they're, you know, criminals in the show.
Yeah. And I think too, to get back to your stuff, when you were talking about like the comic character and not being a prep, like I like him in comics, but only in very specific, use cases and kind of like narrative settings. Like, I think that he's a character that is far too easy to do very poorly, and that is the majority of how he's used or like how he's written. I think most of the storylines are bad and like kind of indulge in that like gun fetishist culture stuff a lot. Like he's when we were talking about kind of like what's his face from Kick-Ass, like Mark Miller.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that style of like storytelling and that like streak of like, I don't know, juvenile power fantasy or whatever that there happens to be and tends to be in comic writers, like Punisher is a perfect conduit for that kind of thing. So that's unfortunate.
Yeah. Right. And we should say, I mean, I think that the Punisher is also, it's not like he like appeared in this vacuum or is uniquely bad in this. I think, I mean, he was created in this period when, you know, there were all these action movies that were really, you know, sort of gun centric. And so he was just, you know, I think the super Marvel's version of that. But then because superheroes have this crazy longevity, you know, he's still with us and still being brought back.
Yeah. And he's very interesting when put in context with all the other heroes and like used in that way as a storytelling tool. I'm thinking of Civil War, like the first Civil War arc. Did you read any of that?
I did read it. I hated it.
Oh, I like that one. But they used him because he was like, I think he was on Captain America's side, but like begrudgingly. And then they had a split when his tactics were eventually like too far for Cap or whatever. I don't remember. It was good though. I thought it was good. I don't know. You hated the storyline, so it's hard to.
Yeah, I mean, that has nothing to do with the Punisher. That was just, I just think that the Civil War storyline in the comics was bad, which really made me surprised. It was like, made it really surprising that I liked the movie as much as I did. And you can read my review on TechCrunch to, you know, see the discussion of the differences between the two. But yeah, I mean, I think, I mean, it's not to say that the Punisher should be completely mothballed. It's just, you know, like it, 2017 is very different. You know,
When was he created? In the 80s?
I think I want to say the 80s. I'm looking this up right now, actually.
Because he feels very much like Spawn, like in that he was a product of his time and circumstance. And like,
yeah, well, this is interesting. He was actually created in 1974. So that's actually considerably earlier than I would have guessed.
Yeah, but, me too.
I do think that he sort of, his peak in popularity was like the late 80s, early 90s, in that sort of image era.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So sort of around the same time, the anti-hero times.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I think based on this discussion alone, I think we should still watch it and talk about it on the show, because I think it's super interesting what kind of discussion it might provoke and thoughts it might provoke, and we could have very different reactions to it.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so let's move on from that conflicted, confusing mess to is there any other news, or are we on to our
I think the one thing you wanted to touch on was the name of the new Star Wars movie.
Oh yeah, let's talk about that. What do you think about that? Do we want to reveal it? Let's reveal it.
Yes, let's reveal it. I mean, this was, you know, this is part of their announcement, which was that they announced that the what was previously known as the untitled Han Solo movie is now known as Solo, A Star Wars Story.
Yes. So, and I saw a very clever tweet. I think I can find this one, actually. I can't off the top of my head remember who did it. Who said, like, this? It's the same name as Rogue One? A Star Wars Story? Like, they're synonyms?
Because Solo, I see what you
Solo
mean.
And Rogue One.
Okay. I thought you just meant that the format of the name was the same. Like, yeah, I know everyone knows that.
No.
Okay.
No, that they are technically, like, a Rogue One is a solo individual. So, actually the same. I wonder if they thought of that. That's pretty clever if they did. It's, like, not exactly right. It's, like, takes a little bit of sort of linguistic gymnastics, I think, to get to that. But,
yeah.
Close enough.
Yeah.
But what do you think about it other than that?
I think it's fine. I mean, I think it's dumb that they took so long. It's like, why didn't they just announce it as his name? And I think my guess
would... figure it out.
They probably had like a whiteboard where they were like, okay, here's the, like, we can call it Han Solo, we can call it Solo, but I bet we can come up with a better name. And then at this point, they're like, well, I guess we're not coming up with a better name.
You can call it Why He Shot First, A Star Wars Story.
Yeah, exactly.
That would actually be great. And then George Lucas would be so enraged and say shitty things about it, like he did with at least one of the previous movies that he was not involved with.
Oh yeah, he did not like The Force Awakens.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if he ever came out and said anything directly shitty about it, but he was dropping shade about it all over the place.
Right. Well, he said that, I mean, as I recall, like, it was essentially, I mean, he was trying to be diplomatic. He was like, look, I sold the company. They're making their thing. Yeah. Right. I'm not, they're not my movies right now. And, I would have, you know, what I've always tried to do is do something new with the Star Wars movies. They went in a different direction.
Yeah.
And it's like, I guess people just wanted to see Episode 4 again. And so, great. Yeah. Those are not his exact words, but it was essentially the tone.
Yeah, it was like that. Yeah,
and then he also said it was like, you know, having you know, your children kidnapped by slavers. So that's cool.
Oh, that's right. He did say that. Oh, man.
And again, I think the rest of it was like, you know, clearly he did not like the movie, but was like really trying not to like say that directly and just to talk around it. But then that one quote kind of blew up, which, fair enough, because that's a dumb thing to say.
It's a super dumb thing to say, yeah. But he's no stranger to saying dumb things, I'm pretty sure, right? He's said a fair number over the years. Has he said anything about the name of the movie yet?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, he doesn't have like a social media. I mean, most of he's retired. He's like focused on trying to build his museum. And I just think that I think the other stuff came out because like it was some sort of profile about, I think probably he only agreed to do it because he wanted to promote the museum. And then, of course, you have to talk about, you know, the new movies.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, I kind of wish it was called something else, but again, I'm with you. I don't feel like it's like necessarily bad or good or anything. It's just was kind of anticlimactic.
Yeah. How do you feel about the movie in general? Are you feeling excited?
I'm feeling excited. I think it has a good cast. So, except for Woody Harrelson, who I hate, but that's fine.
Really?
Yeah. Is this another one where I hate someone that
I love Woody Harrelson. I may have mentioned this on other episodes. Like, I lived in like basically this sort of hippie-ish co-op when I was in college, and so at one point, like, Woody Harrelson came by. I was just like hanging out in the kitchen, and I did not talk to him, but I feel, you know, a warm spot in my heart because of that. But also I just think like he's been like really great recently. I mean, I think he was great in No Country for Old Men. He was great in the Hunger Games movies. Even though his wig is terrible in those movies.
Yes, it is. But I do actually, I mean, I like his performance in those movies. So it's not about his performance in things, which is part of why it's personal. Yeah. It's personal.
That's fair. I mean, it's a little like,
for no reason.
I don't know. Yeah, it's something of this like sort of like these sort of middle-aged Hollywood hippies who I'm a little suspicious of.
Right. Yeah.
Although he has at least, as far as I know, hasn't like managed to turn that into this like giant, you know, commercial brand the way that certain other celebrities have.
No, he did have some kind of like weed company or something.
Yeah, I mean, I think he has commercialized it to a certain extent. So it may just be that he has been as successful as something like Goop. But but like in general, yeah. I mean, it seems, you know, it's like you read some of his interviews and you're like, well, I don't agree with all of that, but you seem like you're coming from a good place. So fine, whatever. And you're good at movies.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think and he was the only thing that came to mind, like looking at the cast and cast photo and like who all is in it, that I was like, maybe that's not so good, but I'm sure he will be good. And yeah, I think, I mean, of course, it looks great. Except for the director thing, that kind of also gives me pause, but
yeah,
the Rogue One had so much drama beforehand too, in terms of people saying like, oh, there's all these problems. And then it turned out to be a very, not a great movie, I would say, but like a perfectly good movie.
Exactly.
That I enjoyed. So I think this will be at the very least the same thing.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that, so it's written, co-written by Lawrence and John Kasdan, and Lawrence Kasdan, you know, wrote Raiders of the Lost Ark. He wrote Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, and he co-wrote, also Force Awakens. And so that definitely makes me feel very hopeful about it. And Ron Howard, I mean, I think, I haven't loved everything he's done. I think that A Beautiful Mind is one of the most like mediocre movies to win Best Picture, but he's clearly, I mean, a very talented director.
He's clearly someone people like.
Yeah.
That's the nice thing to say about someone. Like,
I guess that's what other people wanted. I don't know.
that's the George Lucas way of explaining. Yeah.
I would actually say I'm still excited about it, even though the firing of the directors at that point, in the previous directors, Phil Lord and Chris Miller.
Yeah, and I love their, like, I was just watching Last Man on Earth, the new season recently, and I freaking love it. I love it so much. And that's them. They're involved.
Yeah, so it makes me wonder about, you know, I think they're broader questions just about, like, is, you know, Lucasfilm just going to be taking fewer chances and all the movies going to start feeling a lot more kind of samey. But we'll see. And certainly I think I think everything I've seen suggests that this is going to be, despite the drama, I feel like this is going to be a pretty solid fun Star Wars movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there is a danger, or not a danger, but like that using them is similar to kind of to how Marvel is using, Taika Waititi for the Thor movie. Like,
yeah,
I bet there's concern in the studio that it's not broad enough. Like, they might be too funny and too clever for modern audiences. So maybe that's a concern. Whereas, like, and then you bring, what's his name? Mr. Generalist, beige director, and Ron Howard.
Ron Howard. I've heard good things about In the Heart of the Sea. I've heard that that's actually like this insane kind of beautiful movie.
I haven't seen that yet.
It doesn't necessarily have a great script, but like is really like seeing him like expand, like really like push himself as a director.
Yeah, I'll try to watch that and then maybe redeem my opinion of him. But I mean, I'm sure he had very little to do with it. He basically came in and wrapped things up and then.
Well, I mean, I do think that like they did have to reshoot a lot of it.
Oh, did they?
I think they just wanted to, but as I understand it, like you just in order, because I think it'll, when this movie comes out, it'll say directed by Ron Howard. And in order to do that, he has to have directed a certain amount of the footage. It was, I think it was like similar to like when Richard Donner got fired from directing Superman 2.
Right.
And like that, but even though I think he'd shot like a very good portion of it at that point, like Richard Lester came in. And so like he had to reshoot a lot of the stuff Richard Donner had already shot, you know, possibly because of a new creative direction, but also partly because just if they were going to call him the director, he had to shoot a certain percentage of it.
Yeah, that's like one of those like Directors Guild guideline things, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, I think I'm still excited for it for sure. I'm gonna almost definitely enjoy it. The Star Wars universe has not suffered from that thing that the... Well, I mean, I was going to say it hasn't suffered from that thing from the Marvel universe where, like, they've started just making really bad and really boring stuff in the universe. But then I forgot about the first three movies. So
you mean the prequels?
Episodes, yeah, 1, 2, and 3, which
yeah.
were that writ large. Like,
although, even though, I mean, I don't have any... I've never seen episode 2. I will never see episode 2. I don't have any desire to see episodes 1 or 3 again. But, like, there is some... I think, like, you know, part of the argument is that those movies are, like, disasters. But they're, like, disasters that don't resemble any other films. And that the risk with Lucasfilm is that they go too far in the other direction. Where it's just, you know, middle-of-the-road, beige Star Wars movies for yeah. the rest of our lives.
Yeah, that would be... very sad. We're not there yet, though. No yes. doom and gloom. Everything's
I mean,
going
and
good.
Certainly, I mean, despite all the doubts about Solo, I just can't even bring myself to say the name seriously. You know, I think, I mean, I think everyone agrees that The Last Jedi just looks insanely good. So, whatever.
Yeah.
Star Wars will be fine for a while.
Yeah, we're in good hands, mostly. Okay, so... enough of that, I think. Are we done with the news for this?
Yeah, we're done with the news. I think we should move on into our review.
All right, let's do it.
So yeah, Inhumans, a series from ABC, which is, yes, we should again acknowledge, not a streaming original, although I did watch it. This is for this podcast, I downloaded the ABC app to try it out. It's fine. It's whatever. Like a lot of, like, the same with, like, CBS All Access, I think the ad technology is kind of bad, so, like, you just end up with this, like, spinning wheel whenever you, like, go to a commercial break, but other than that...
Wait, did you have fine. A blocker on?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, just playing it regularly.
Huh.
But, I mean, it actually has had, the Inhumans has had this interesting release because it was put on IMAX screens a couple of weeks before it premiered on television.
Yeah. Which I was watching it. I was also watching it on. I was just watching it on my computer on my Bell Fibe TV streaming service or whatever. But it was like, I was just thinking about that, and I was like, oh my god! Like, what must it have been like to have seen this? And you could tell, like, there was so much intentional, like, grandioseness in terms of the shots, but it felt like they had given an amateur filmmaker their first IMAX camera and said, like, do whatever you want with this. And they just went crazy. Like, when you give Photoshop to someone, you're like, here's the lens flare tool. And then you just walk away and they go like, oh, lens flare, everything. This was like, look at this. It's sweeping, but it felt like all caps sweeping and like right. just for no right. reason.
Right. Yeah. And I think there's a really good AV Club article that we should also link to, which is about the... like, just why was this put in theaters? Because it is so ugly. And that, yes, there are, like, that I think this AV Club reviewer assumed that basically the second, there's a competent second unit director who was then, like, basically, you know, put in a helicopter with an IMAX camera yeah. and, like, shot these
get
amazing...
Get B-roll of Hawaii. Like, that was their direction, and it was fine and easy.
Yeah, yeah. But then, as soon as you get to, like, a regular scene, it's just so ugly. It is... incredibly, incredibly ugly and just looks like a chintzy science fiction series from like 20 years ago.
Yeah. They thought they had these like the settings that are meant to be Atalan, like on the moon, are like architecturally interesting structures, but they managed to make them look like cheap cardboard sets that are shot with IMAX cameras for whatever reason.
Right. And
because of the like really shitty costumes on people like walking around in them partly and makeup and like special effects, like all that makes the stuff that is probably actually pretty nice looking in person look cheap and dumb and fake.
Right. So basically the plot of Inhumans is that it's about these groups of like superpowered beings who are, as a lot of people pointed out, not mutants. They're Inhumans, and their powers sort of also manifest when they're adolescents and they're exposed to this Terrigen mist, and basically like so they're ruled by this king called Black Bolt who cannot speak because his voice is so powerful it would kill you if he spoke, but he has his brother named Maximus, who's played by, I don't know how to pronounce his name, but like Ewan Rheon, who's Ramsay Bolton.
Yeah.
From
we still haven't Game learned how Thrones. To pronounce his name. We had plenty of time. We did not learn.
We chose not to research that. I think it's also because it is very, I think at some point I looked it up and it is very difficult to get the correct pronunciation. So I decided not to try.
There you go.
And so like Maximus basically has his, you know, this becomes clear in the first episode, this isn't a spoiler, like has his own schemes, and basically, you know, the first two episodes are about his, you know, coup to take over the throne of the Inhumans.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, I mean, I think that's like the arc of the series, right? But
yeah. And it basically ends with like a lot of the sort of protagonists, these different superhero Inhumans, you know, separated, on Hawaii.
Yeah. And I think, okay, so let's put this up right up front. I want to talk about spoilers for this because they're so stupid and the plot is so bad and dumb anyway that there's no real possibility of spoiling anything for anyone.
That's fine. And I would, so I mean, if you don't, if for some reason you want to watch Inhumans Unspoiled, you should, just stop listening. Although also,
You don't want to watch it unspoiled. The only reason to watch
Inhumans is to like laugh at it and just kind of clutch your head and like wonder how this happened.
Yeah.
And so I don't think we're going to spoil anything.
There is no value in, you can't spoil something that is already awful is the ultimate bottom line, right? Like it cannot be spoiled because there is no enjoyment to be had except for laughing at how bad it is. It is very, very bad.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay. So getting right into it. Like first of all, everyone in this seems like they have never acted before, have just been told, now you are an actor, and then handed a script and like also not given much time to memorize the script or anything. Like it's
I would disagree with that slightly in the sense that I think the Game of Thrones actor playing Maximus, whose name I won't say again on this podcast, is actually like, you know, he clearly knows how to play a villain. He's doing fine.
What? No way. That's crazy. He is not good at that. Have you seen him in anything else? You have to watch him in other things. Well, Game of Thrones you've seen him in.
I've seen him in Game of Thrones. And I think, I mean, his accent is clearly wandering all over the place.
Yeah.
But like, or not even, it's just like, it's a very weird accent.
I think he's game. I think he's doing the best he can with what he's got. But I think that what he's got is very, very poor in terms of motivation, like characterization.
Like, right. I mean, yeah, exactly. I think that the character is really poorly conceived, but it doesn't matter. But I think he's like having a good time. So when he's on, I would say that when he's on screen, I'm like a lot more interested in what's happening in the show than like pretty much any other time.
Yeah. Everyone else is wallpaper. Like literally, you're just cannot. You cannot pay attention to them because they do not command attention.
So here is a line of dialogue that they made Maximus the villain say, which no human being could say, which was, "Our finite kingdom forces us into a strict caste system."
Oh yeah, there are so many good exposition lines. Like, to be fair, the world of Inhumans is weird and strange and hard to explain to a TV audience, but I think that what that means is you should never have made this movie, or you should have handed it to someone who had expertise in telling complex stories in clever ways.
I think that that's like one of the challenges in general. I mean, yes, the Inhumans are like a pretty out there concept, and I think that in the past, the strategy with a lot of this stuff has been to really tone down the weirdness and sort of make it feel much more like a standard Hollywood movie. You know, starting with X-Men, and you know, like the colorful costumes become these sort of like black leather jumpsuits, and the crazier like stuff like sort of gets shunted off to the side. And what this show has done, and I think Marvel in general is, I think, opening up to the idea that you could like include more of the kind of craziness. I mean, you started to see it with Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
And
Guardians of the Galaxy is a great example of like, hey, this is a very off the wall, difficult sort of concept to come to grips with, especially if you aren't told it over 25 years of comics. Like,
right.
Hard thing to explain and access for a general audience, but they did an amazing job of it, obviously.
Right. And this goes in this direction where there's a lot of stuff from the comics that it feels like they poured it over without thinking about or like any reflection at all. Like, I mean, just basic character design stuff, like where Crystal, who's one of the part of the royal family of Inhumans, just has this like black streak through her hair.
Yeah.
And it just looks so dumb.
Yeah. Because it's from the comics, but it's
right.
Like,
it's from the comics.
That's they thought about it. They just thought, this is how it looks in the comics, and they didn't think any further about it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just think they did not, like, they didn't. It's like this mix of like crazy stuff from the comics. And then, like, just like bog standard, cheap, you know, TV science fiction that's like the most predictable and dumb stuff you can imagine. You kind of just mix those two together, and it's just, yeah, it's not good.
Yeah, no. Everything anyone says is either exposition, like you talked about before, like blatant, ridiculous, like, oh, I don't think you're supposed to read that. That's just like backstory for you to understand where the character is coming from. But there are no other lines. Like, the people are not humans, because they're inhumans. Haha, good joke.
Hey.
They're not characters. Like, they have no personality, or beyond their powers, like, there's a basic explanation of their power set, which is also all done through like blatant exposition.
Right.
And don't get me started on their power sets, because they are the powers basically of the people, the comic characters they represented, or they represent, but like, Gorgon's powers is like strong kicking, and that's basically all he does in the show to show them all. Is like literally like, oh, my legs are strong. Oh yeah, watch this, my legs strong. Like, it's very, very, very stupid. And the what's his name? Who is the master like strategic guy who can like
Karnak?
Yeah, so Karnak is a great character in the comics. He can like see every outcome, and like, he's a perfect strategist. Like, he can plan perfectly because of that. And in the thing, they just make it so stupid. There's the scene where the server at the royal feast,
yeah,
and he like just lays out like how their relationship would go. It's
right.
so bad and so dumb, and it's like also not at all like what. Where did you get this? Like, what is? Are you trying to make him some kind of like sexy womanizer too? Because that's also the only time they really bring that up or reference that at all. It's so stupid and so throwaway. It's like,
right.
They were
one. I would say actually, then in a later scene where you actually see him like play out one scenario.
Oh, and in the like, fight scene.
Yeah, I thought that was actually kind of fun. It wasn't great, but it was like fun.
No, that was like, this is how, that's a cool way to explain those powers in a way that makes sense, like cinematically. That was the one thing, but they didn't do a great job of it. It was just like, conceptually, this is all right. And then you executed it sort of poorly and stupidly.
But like, I mean, I think that also gets to this other problem, which I think is that all of the main characters are incredibly unsympathetic, and like,
yes,
I mean, they don't really have much of a personality anyway, but in as much as they do have a personality, they're like, you like totally are like, oh yeah, like, why are we like rooting for the royal family,
yeah,
of this like
slave,
you know,
owning culture.
Yeah,
by right, the end they, of the like, movie cut. You are like, I don't want those, I'm glad that nothing worked out for those people, and I hope things continue to not work out for those people,
right?
And like that could be an interesting narrative device, but it's not intentional. It's clearly not intentional.
Yeah, exactly. Like the scene with Karnak that you're talking about, where he's like, you know, where he's starting to like kind of have romantic sparks with this servant. Part of his whole monologue was about him like not ever wanting to like get together with a servant because he's above that.
Yeah,
and like, and then yeah, we cut like so like one of the
and they
the,
all treat everyone like shit.
Yeah, like so part of like the style, this the really like dumb style of the show is like they like tell you exactly the location of where you are. Like, in fact, like even if you've been at this location before, they'll just keep telling you. And like the show opens with like island of Oahu, and then there's a beat and it says Hawaii.
But like, right. Either one would have been fine if you had just done the one, or if you'd done it all at once, but you had to do the beat and then like, yeah, Hawaii, you dummies, like, you guys know where it is.
But like, and then like later on when like when we cut back to Oahu, it says island of Oahu, Hawaii again, in case we forgot. But like, there's one part where it says lower caste quarters,
yeah,
or lower caste sector, and you're like, what? There's a caste system? Like, this is like messed up. And then like you have like Maximus like giving some line of dialogue about how, like, well, you know, things are just really tough, and that's why we have to have this caste system, and like that's why if you don't have powers, you're basically condemned to like work in the mines. And except for like Maximus, because very openly he was the brother of our hero, and so our, you know, our hero, the king, who is totally okay with this caste system, saved his brother from slavery in the mines, but is totally cool with everyone else having to slave away in the mines. You're like, this, what? This is terrible. I don't like this.
Yeah, they try to like excuse it by like, listen, this is the natural balance of like, this is how the society is going to work. They live on the moon. They live on the moon. And you're like, why?
Yeah, why don't you like see how your society goes on the moon, buddy?
Yeah, yeah. You got 1,400 people on the moon. What are you going to do? Not have a caste system? Like to see you try it. Like it's, it's very, very weird and dumb. But
and again, if they wanted to treat them like anti-heroes or to have them be like...
Yeah, like, oh, maybe you... They are problematic at first and then they change. And I mean, I'm sure there's going to be some kind of change arc where they start to realize that. But it just... You are supposed to meant to be felt like, uh-oh, Maximus is clearly a villain. He's doing villainous things. But in it, you're like, I don't know. Like, these people all suck. Like, Maximus sucks, sure. But so do all these other people. Like, everyone sucks in this. So I don't really feel good for anybody here.
Right, right. I think something else that I wanted to talk about was Medusa's hair.
No, just don't. It's so, so dumb that you're like, the only smart decision that this show made creatively was having her hair be shaved off very quickly, because when they had it and they tried to animate it and make it look cool, it looks so dumb. And imagine the acting direction for that, where they must have been to whomever that actress is. I didn't get the names of anyone in this except
Sarinda Swan.
Okay, Sarinda Swan. So they must have just said like, okay, now stand there and now lash your head around angrily as if your hair has come to life and is attacking all these people, and then to all the people that are around her, like, now jump and you fall down over here, like, and it must have looked so stupid, like, it couldn't possibly have looked stupider than it looked in the final product that they actually showed to audiences.
Yeah, and I mean, just like, I mean, and then even the scene where they're like shaving her hair off, it just like looks so dumb, like, even that, like, they couldn't do well, like, and you're just sort of like, it's supposed to be this really like sad, you know, moment, and you're just like,
they couldn't even have her have like long hair and just dye her long hair. They had a horrible wig on, even in the parts that are not CG.
Right, but they were obviously just like cutting around to hide the fact that they weren't like, you know, that her hair had already been shaved. And so like, you know, like the whole thing was just really, really stupid.
It was very stupid. I you didn't get to this. So okay, can we talk about Gorgon? Like, they all get sent to Earth, right? Like to escape Maximus. And Maximus too, his backstory is so poorly explained. Because in the comics, he's like Maximus the Mad, and he's actually insane. He's kind of Loki. He's kind of a Loki-like figure.
Okay.
And it's good, and it's like interesting. And again, it's not explained here. All of these characters are good and interesting in the comics. They are just done such a disservice in this. But like in one of the episodes you didn't see, because you didn't see episode 3, right?
No, I think 4 episodes have aired so far. I've seen the first 2, you know, because it honestly took a real act of will even to watch episode 2. So like, I wasn't going to go further than that.
So in episode 3, so first of all, they open it up with, what's his name? The Irish guy from Lost. Is he Irish in Lost?
Oh yeah, I know who you're talking about. The time traveling guy.
Yeah.
A lot of time travel in Lost, but
so they bring him up, and you're like, oh no, why are you in this? You're good normally. You shouldn't be here. And it's not explained, and it's so dumb and doesn't make any sense. But then
he was probably just like, he probably like just was just like hanging out in Hawaii, and so they're like, hey, do you want to like,
yeah,
or maybe he just wanted Hawaiian vacation. I don't know, but he's like, well, yeah,
he does.
Sure.
he does a lot of this stuff. He does a lot of, he does the 100 right. as well. But a part in this too. So there, Karnak is running around with like, he like runs into like a drug making operation or something. It's very strange too. And they kind of adopt him. And then he has a moment with like one of the women there, and the woman is like, you have to like share something about yourself with us or to let us in. And then he talks about his tattoos and he's like, oh, okay, let me tell you about my tattoos. They were a bad decision I made when I was a teenager. Look at this. I thought this looked really cool when I was a teenager. Like, wait a minute. What? Are you saying that he got these face tattoos as like a bad choice when he was like a rebellious youth? Like, this is your backstory for Karnak's tattoos? This is amazing that you're saying this. And it's very, very stupid and not in keeping with anything else they've done about the character.
I guess is that part of that supposed to be like this contrast where now he like, you know, all he would never make a bad decision yes, like that because
that's exactly, like, and he explicitly says that. He's like, I keep them to remind me that now right. I never make any unwise decisions or some shit.
Right.
And you're like, fuck, go, no.
Although I have to say, like, one thing, and in partly it's not like exactly the way that Karnak's powers work are not super clear, even despite the amount of time that the show is devoted to them.
Yeah.
But like, so they're like in the second episode, he actually loses, or his powers are muted or damaged because he falls. And it's this thing where then, so it makes sense that he like then starts like getting confused and making bad decisions after that. But then I don't understand how he fell in the first place. If he's supposed to be this sort of very, you know, this guy who like sees all the outcomes, like why didn't he see like, oh yeah, if I go down this path.
Well, he has one of those powers that's tricky in the comics, right? Because you're like, we painted ourselves into a corner here. Like say, yeah. like a Superman problem, right? Like,
right.
Oh yeah, we made him like perfect in every way. So how do we walk this back?
Right.
So that is like, okay, I guess there are like conditions that you can't anticipate or like work around. That's sort of okay. But it's still, yeah, they don't explain it that way. They don't put any limitations on it. So then when he does do something like, oh, I just fell and hit myself, you're like, wait, that's pretty avoidable.
It's just the whole scene, just like it just plays out in this like dumb way where, yeah, he's just like climbing around and then and you're like, why are you doing this?
There's a lot of weird people like just climbing around in the jungle in bad costumes that goes on in this movie across all the characters. And Hawaii is a beautiful backdrop for that, but it's so bizarre that they've.
Right.
It just plays out very weirdly. And then, like, we didn't even talk about the fact that, oh God, why am I forgetting his name now? Not Goliath.
Karnak. Black Bolt.
No, is his name Goliath?
Goliath, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
Goliath
yeah.
is one of the characters, okay. yeah.
So when he meets up with the surfers and is like, hey, right. this, he gets saved by the surfers because he tries to swim and his weakness ends up being his horse legs can't swim, which is very good. But then like, there's a surfer saves him and then he meets up with this cool gang of surfers that are just hanging out on the beach.
Right.
And then he recruits the cool gang of surfers to be his like de facto army for when the bad guys come for him, which right. happens in the third episode.
Well, I mean, and also the way he recruits them is like in a
way just reinforce him. Like,
well, cause he, so first, yeah, they're like, you should bring the fight to you. And he's like, all right, I'll do that. And he's like, by the way, you should leave the beach because we're gonna have this giant battle yeah. on your beach. Which you're like, well, you should have thought of that. Maybe like you should have gone somewhere else.
Yeah,
you
know,
like,
yeah.
If you actually cared about any person, anything.
And then they were like, "This people. Is our beach.
Yeah,
we're gonna stay and help you." And we're, what? Who are these people? What are you talking about? Why? Who is yeah. this modeled on? Are these real? Like, they later well, have I think, repelling
part of the subtext is
they
I think they're supposed to be
automatic
like, indigenous
weapons.
Hawaiians, like not like just like random people who like Americans who live on Hawaii, but like. It's still like
it's still very odd, and then yeah, that they have combat training later on, and like all this tactical gear makes no sense at all too. But that's also in episode 3,
right?
When they fight the guy, the assassin that Maximus has, and also this guy who is a death guy, who they reference in the first episode, but then they have the big reveal in the third episode, and he's just wearing a mask, and his power is death related, and you're not sure what that means, but everybody's afraid of him, including her. Okay. And he,
And then he ends up being like a wisecracker. And you're like, wait, what? Why is this? This guy's the comic relief now? Like before they were talking about him as the doom guy. And then he's the jokester. And then there's one inhuman that goes with her because there's a whole squad. And she has powers of her plants. And she's like, this place is great. There's so many plants. And you're like, what? What did you do on the moon? How did people realize that you had a useful power set? And right. No one understands anything about it. That's the other thing too. People have like zero understanding of like human civilization and human life. Like no one understands the concept of money. But they understand some things. Like they understand things that are equivalent to the concept of money, but then they don't understand like, yeah, anything about traffic or cars or whatever. So it's
right. You get the sense that like they never really thought out like how does inhuman society work. It was more just like what's funny in the moment to have them misunderstand.
What can we use?
Which I mean,
here
to be fair, I think
goofs.
Like there's a degree to which like again these are like this is a society of like superpowered beings who live on the moon. So like there's a certain point where you just need to suspend your disbelief. But it just you get the sense that none of this has really been thought through. That it's just kind of like, hey, like you know what would be cool in this moment?
Yeah, yeah.
And I have to say, like, one as much as like the thing in the trailers that I hated the most and looked the dumbest was Black Bolt and like his like you know because like you basically got an actor who can like a lead character who cannot speak and then he has to basically like speak in this sort of like sign language which then no one else really seems to like completely understand and so like his wife has to translate for him and it's just like it just seems like. Very tough to pull off, especially with this very kind of blandly handsome actor. And I will say, like, some of the stuff with once he gets to Earth is actually kind of fun because he's like just like this sort of like comic relief guy.
It's like, fun in that way. In like, it's almost like he is Mr. Bean of space aliens right. or something.
Yeah, yeah. Where he like sort of like undoes his like handcuffs and just like politely hands them to the cop and like is like, hey, like let's go. Just tell me what to do. I'll do whatever you want. And he just kind of like stands around and like is like kind of like goofily like cooperative. Like that stuff is actually enjoyable.
Yeah. And then later they put him in an actual prison and there's a guard who is maybe the worst acted character in the entire thing, like a speaking role who he like is like the bad guard trying to get him set up to beat up and stuff. And then he goes into the prison yard, like they've made a circle and he wants him to get beat up by the other inmates. And then one of the other inmates comes up to him and says like, you're the guy who beat up all the cops, right? And he's like, he nods. And then the guy's like, fist bump, give me a fist bump.
Oh, God.
And then he's like the cool guy of the jail. It's very, very bad. But there's also a line, and this was maybe my favorite line in the whole series, in the third episode.
So you've seen four episodes or three episodes?
Three episodes. I haven't seen the fourth one yet. I'm going to watch it because
honestly,
I'm enjoying how bad
it is. You're committed. You're like, you're probably going to watch the whole first season.
I probably will. They'll never have another one, but it hasn't petered out. I thought it would peter out into like, oh, now it's just like baseline bad. Like it's still very, very bad, like comically bad. And as exemplified by this line. So they have Crystal, who's still on Adelan, and like Max is trying to, or wait, what's his name? Is it Max?
Maximus.
Maximus. Why do I never remember names? I don't know. Anyway, Maximus
dumb names. And we should say again,
comics. I've read it all.
I think the comics are yes, but like it is like adapting the comics is inherently a very high difficulty level. But like they just also then failed on every level.
Yeah. Yes. But so Maximus has been trying to convince Crystal to come around and like back his plan so that he can get support of like the upper echelon of Adelan society. And she's, first of all, they just keep showing her in her room listening to her headphones, which is also, I don't understand. She's a brooding teenager.
Right, but like, yeah, that's part of, I think, what I was like talking about earlier, I think actually before the show, was like, just like, no one seems to have like a life that like they're busy with when they're not like with the first time you meet Maximus, he's just like standing around in the courtyard.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's always just standing around. No one's ever doing anything except for whatever the scene calls for. There's no sense that there's like a real world here. It's just like an actor being like, oh yes, I am here. What is my line now?
Yeah. And nothing else is the artifice of filmmaking perhaps so obvious as it is in this show. But so he says, like, okay, give me, if you endorse me, like, I'll treat you well and I'll give you my, or access to your dog, like Lockjaw, and all this stuff. And she's like, okay, I'll go along with your plan. And then she said, okay, like, where's Lockjaw? Like, it'll look weird if I'm not there with Lockjaw. Everyone knows that we're just always together. And to his credit, he's like, okay, well, that's stupid. I mean, I know what you're trying to do. You want to get the teleporting dog next to you so you can teleport away. Like, I'm not going to do that. So then she says, like, okay, let's just go. And he goes in front of the council, the genetic council, by the way, is what they're called. And he says, like, look, she endorses me. The royal family endorses me. Like, go ahead, Crystal, tell them. And she says, Maximus is king. Way to beat. Of no one.
That is a pretty good burn.
It was amazing. And they're all like gasps around, and then he's infuriated, but it's it was really, really, really good. Like, they played it up as a very dramatic moment, and it was like, no, that's, but it's funny, but it's not what the way that you guys wanted it to be. Like, it's just goofs, like, hilarious, but yeah.
All right, so anyways, I think one other thing we do have to talk about is Lockjaw. How do we feel about Lockjaw, the teleporting dog?
I have affection for Lockjaw because Lockjaw is very good in comics, but Lockjaw is it's very hard to turn him into something that is
that works from like
a filmic perspective, right? Or a cinematic or video perspective. I think kind of like Groot or Rocket Raccoon, you would have thought, okay, these are difficult too, but those they did really well. Lockjaw. Right. Like it looks like a big bad sort of CG thing, right?
Right. I mean, I would say, I mean, part of it is I do think that you know, Groot and Rocket Raccoon, they probably had a lot more money than they. I mean, I think I think this is a big budget show, but it's still a show compared to a big budget movie. But I think Lockjaw just he never looks like he's occupying. He has that CGI thing where he just never looks like he's occupying the same space as the physical characters.
The cues all seem off, like in terms of where they were telling them to point and look and like touch or whatever. Yeah,
right. But I do think he's really cute. I mean, I'm happier when he's on screen. The same way that I'm happier when Maximus is on screen.
But I do think in the title segment they do like a cool title segment with like really simplified versions of all their logos.
Yeah,
And then at the end, they're like, here's a stupid animation of Lockjaw. And that was like, it doesn't work. Like, it fits, I guess, in terms of the very basic, like, this design looks like the designs of the other logos we put here, but it looks very stupid and very childish.
Yeah, I mean, he's inherently sort of a fun, childish character. But yeah, it's true. I mean, I also, like, at the same time, I'm like, I'm reading, like, the Miss Marvel comics right now, which Lockjaw appears in.
Yeah.
And like their execution of Lockjaw is just amazing because he's like so cute and lovable, and like they just have like the exact right sound effects. And compared to that, I think like, yeah, you look at this show like, meh, it's fine. It's like, it's definitely better than almost anything else on this show, but it's still not as good as it could be.
Yeah. And I mean, that's not a super fair comparison because Miss Marvel Lockjaw is probably peak Lockjaw, like best ever implementation of Lockjaw.
Yes, that's true.
But yeah, he's always good. He's always good in the comics, and he's not good here, unfortunately.
I might even say he's good. He's just not.
Like they should have changed the whole world to fit with him rather than trying to make him fit in this really bad, dumb world that they've created.
Right, right. I think that's fair.
Yeah. Anyways, I can't wait to watch the next episode.
Right. Okay. So let's like how many, because as I understand it, I don't think this is like not a hit.
Eight are shot.
How many episodes do you think they're gonna make?
So eight are shot and produced and like in the can.
Are they? And that's definitely the first season. Or are they continuing to work on additional episodes?
I'm not sure. Actually, I'm not sure. I can't see how they would. I cannot. it seems impossible to me. But if it takes a certain kind of person to hate watch something even, right? Or to like watch something for amusement's sake. And I just don't think there's enough people to do that. And there's definitely not enough people watching this because it's a redeeming show. Like, no one could like this show. No one.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm sorry if you're listening to this and you like this show somehow. You can stop listening to the show. Our show. Please.
Yeah. One other thing I wanted to ask was like, you know, I've never watched Iron Fist, and I probably never will. So it's this both Iron Fist and Inhumans were, you know, the TV versions were created and they're show run by Scott Buck. And I have nothing against Scott Buck as a human being. He may be a great person for all I know, but like, he should not be allowed to make any more Marvel TV shows. No. Maybe not any more TV shows of any kind, but certainly no more superhero TV shows, because he's obviously really bad at it.
I mean, I don't know. Based on this, like, I don't know how you could allow him to produce any other kind of television either. Because it's not like he's getting the superhero elements wrong. It's like he's getting the basic storytelling and like how a work of visual fiction operates wrong. Right?
Yes.
Like, it's the fundamental building blocks that are wrong here. The exposition yes. stuff and like dialogue and people not looking like they've just been woken up in an animatronic display at a Disney ride. Like,
that is correct. So I mean, I just, you know, whoever, like, after Iron Fist was like, yeah, this is good, you should like be like the guy in charge of like our big bet on ABC with ABC and IMAX, like, for sure.
Well, they must have been concurrent, right?
I mean, I guess, yeah. I mean,
maybe it was just based on like, he has landed this, it's on his resume, sight unseen.
Yeah, I mean, I think they, I don't, I don't, yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, show running a TV show would like keep you busy enough that you couldn't, it'd be tough to like really split
your time really
between
them
the two.
Unless you're doing these two shows, which are very bad and seem like they require work at all. Yeah,
probably took about, you could write the whole thing in like a day.
Yeah. we could write a better show in a day than this.
Right. Cause I mean, really the only limit, cause there's no thought involved. So clearly the only limitation is like typing speed.
Yes. Yes. Anyways, that was kind of fun.
So I think next week our goal is to get hold of screeners for Stranger Things,
yes.
and then possibly review Lore as well, depending on sort of how timing works out and everything. But we're definitely going to have some sort of Halloween themed episode next week.
Yeah, it's All Hallows Eve, the best Eve. And actually, I'll be on. We'll figure this out. But I'll be on Japan time. So.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, yeah. We'll sort it out. One of us will be like incredibly sleep deprived and deranged.
Likely me, because I'm sure I won't adjust to a schedule.
Right, and I'm not gonna like, you know, stay.
You're not
gonna
inconvenience yourself. I understand.
No, absolutely not.
Okay, great. Anything else you're excited to see or have been watching? Or before we,
I'm going to a press screening of Thor next week. Hopefully I can. And actually today, so by the time this episode goes up, I think the initial wave of Thor Ragnarok reviews should be out. So yes. I'll be able to talk about it on the next episode.
Yeah, and that's because it's already out in some markets, or is coming out very soon in some markets? Is that why that's working?
I don't know if that's true. It's coming out at the very beginning of November in the U.S. And
it has an October release date in Italy.
Okay, there you go.
But I don't know why. October 10th in some theaters. So it's already out in some theaters, yeah. But I assume that's the reason that they're doing these reviews.
Yeah,
so early,
I mean, I think
right?
sometimes they've just been like putting it like lifting the embargo like a week, like 2 weeks early for some reason. They like feel like it's gonna like help build good buzz.
Yeah, and all the reviews I've seen so far have been favorable, at least based on like the one line summary or something. So
right,
yeah. Usually, if they think it's gonna do well, they'll give it a lot of time. If they think it's gonna do not so well, they won't give you any time or any.
Right. Well, they'll like. Basically be like, hey, do you want to like see a screening on Wednesday? The movie comes out Thursday.
Yeah. So you don't have enough time to file. The embargo is for 6 months from now.
Yeah.
Great. Well, I mean, I'm very excited to see that too. I just have regular human tickets for the premiere, but super pumped. Oh, wow. Music by Mark Mothersbaugh too on top of the Taika Waititi.
That's
awesome.
Nice.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. So, I mean, we'll leave it at that. That's the next thing to be excited about. Plus, Stranger Things and Lore, too. Halloween fun.
Cool. Talk to you guys later.
See ya.